the controversial evidence, and you are in for an eyeful where you can draw your own conclusions about whether or not it is art. There's no denying the exquisite qualities of the black and white photographs, but because of the blatant bondage sadomasochistic subject matter, whether there's truly art or not relies on the eye of the beholder. For most of us, it embraces obscenity. However, it also illustrates a creativity that is the cutting edge of free expression. To me, a valid form of art, whether it's all to my taste or not. Look at the pictures is not for the faint-hearted, beginning with the self-portrait of Mapplethorpe with his head turned toward the viewer, kneeling attired in leather with a bullwhip, emerging from part-side, rather not detailed. Yes, it is shocking, but by the end of my two-hour experience, I learned to appreciate his talent, and many of his photographs are really lovely, even if the BSM collection is not in tune with my aesthetic. The documentary is a most effective piece of persuasion, proving that Mapplethorpe was a fearless and important artist who never denied that a number of his photographs were obscene. Definitely eye-opening and perverse, and many directly pornographic, it's directed towards a homosexual point of view. Yet still, many of the statuesque nudes are beautiful, parts and all. It seems obscenity can be art. Less known is that Mapplethorpe did an array of stunning portraits in black and white, as well as photos of flowers depicted in color that reminded me a bit of Georgia O'Keeffe's work. Mapplethorpe's 1989 traveling exhibition caused quite the brouhaha, so much so that when you still hear his name, you immediately flash on the trademark, graphic erotica, and the controversy surrounding it. No matter how disturbing and often gut-wrenching his visuals are, they remain an honest appraisal of homosexual interaction, complete with all imaginable variables. Shock value was Mapplethorpe's forte. Beautiful black-and-white photographs that worship the human body in its most private and controversial of activities are his legacy. Unforgettable but brutally honest depictions that define what is truly voyeuristic appeal. Mapplethorpe was a technical master who carefully photographed flowers the same way he did men's bodies, turning sex organs into two-dimensional sculptures in shades of light and dark. Surprisingly, Mapplethorpe had a typical 50s childhood, one of five kids in a suburban Catholic home. He grew up into a tall, wavy-haired man-child, kind of a version of Jim Morrison, but fragilely innocent, ironic considering his inclinations were confrontational, bold, and dominantly sexual. He moved into New York's Chelsea Hotel, where he formed a long-term relationship with Patti Smith, but eventually edged into homosexuality as his preference. There are some great photos of these two thin vagabonds united in their commitment to art and a bohemian lifestyle that grew into a mutual determination for fame and fortune. Manically ambitious, Mapplethorpe began his career playing with gay porn collages saturated with color, moving on to Polaroids, and finally, beautifully rendered, brazenly pornographic couplings seen in smooth, hip black and white. It was a real education for me. Fetishism to the max. Totally engaging and at times mind-blowing, Look at the Pictures is a portrait of an artist who had no limits, an endless lineup of lovers and one-night stands, insatiable orgies of gay abandon. Nearing the end, Mapplethorpe still managed a major show at the Whitney Museum, no longer the handsome icon of sensual decadence, but determined to enjoy one last stand before AIDS took its toll. The documentary is a testament to human interaction with many visually disturbing moments, but also it can be seen through the lens where a man captured tragic moments of sexuality, undeniably, unforgettably powerful.
No matter what the future brings, as time goes by.
Good evening. This is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. You're listening to The Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. Before I get into my program, let's have a little Tom Morello. Which side are you on?
Thank you. Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
This is WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. Really and truly here. I hope you've had a great weekend, Father's Day weekend. I had a good weekend, and I hope that you had a great weekend too. This is WFT Champaign. We are community radio for East Central Illinois, and here on the Midwatch, I try to take some of the spin off the Dittohead media machine, correct the lies and misinformation of the RNC and the leadership of the Republican Party. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect those of WFT, its board of directors, station manager, associates, or Prairie Air Inc. For the most part, my friends, it's you and me. Out here on this limb, sawing as fast as we can, because it is an unscreened call-in show. I like to listen to what you have to say. I hope as much as you like to listen to what I have to say. The number is 217-FLY-LIVE. That's 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483. Give me a call, add your voice to the program. Let's have a conversation. We can figure stuff out. This is a two-hour show, so about 8 o'clock we will have the sync sound system with Adrian in here. This is one of those magical months where we have five Wednesdays. Adrian will be in here this week, and he's going to share some electronic music with you from around the world. I think that he finds some really unusual music. I hope that you stick around for his program as well. Tonight on the program, among other things, things that you add to the program, among other things, we're going to be talking about Cindy Sheets. We're going to be talking about Trey Gowdy. We're going to be talking about Donald Trump. We're going to be talking about the Supreme Court of the United States of America. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things. And I hope you will enjoy each of those topics or add one of your own by giving me a call on the unscreened call-in line, 217-FLY-LIVE. Where do I start? Let's start with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court gave out its final opinions of this session. The eight justices on the Supreme Court can hang their robes up until October, take a little vacation because they work so hard, doing so little, and that's kind of the way the various branches of government function. But the Supreme Court today, yesterday actually, had a couple of really, in my opinion, amazing decisions. The first decision that they passed down was a 5-3 decision validating the 1972 Roe v. Wade decision, that a woman does have a right to choose to have an abortion if she feels it's necessary or prudent. I think that women have a right to control their own bodies. I believe that with every fiber of my being when it comes to a medical decision. The woman's decision should be the primary driver of what happens. Prior to 1973, that was not the law in the United States of America, or at least most of the United States of America, although there were a couple of progressive states that did allow women to choose how to treat their own bodies. New York State was one of them. We had the Roe versus Wade decision, which determined that a woman has the right constitutionally to choose whether or not to have an abortion. In that decision, the Supreme Court was very careful indeed to say that states could regulate the abortion process, but they could not do it in such a way as to place an undue burden on the woman trying to make a decision to have an abortion. That was the ruling in 1973, Roe v. Wade. Over the past 6 years, especially, the Republicans that like to tell women what they can do, when they can do, and how they can do it, have fought vehemently against the Roe v. Wade decision. For decades, they've been trying to rebalance the Supreme Court so that the Supreme Court would be the one making the decision, making the law, if you will, as the Supreme Court was accused of doing in 1973, was writing law from the bench, even though they were simply finding that the woman had a right to privacy in her own health care matters. And one of those things that was able to be kept private was her desire to have or not have an abortion. To this day, a fetus is not a child at any stage of that fetal development. It is not a child. The Republicans, some of them, conservatives, some of them, would have you believe that as soon as that spermatozoa penetrates the shell of the egg in a woman's womb, a child is born. Emotionally, a child is born. They would like you to believe that. Of course, they don't want to put their money where their mouth is. They do not want to give that they call child full rights. They want to pick and choose the rights that that human being, that fetus, the rights that fetus has. You see, over all of these years since 1973, if Republicans were serious about ending abortion, they could have simply passed legislation when they had majorities in the House and Senate and a Republican president a few years ago to make that the law of the land. They didn't do it because they didn't want it. They didn't want it for many reasons. The first reason is political. Some of you people who do have high moral beliefs that a child begins its existence when the spermatozoa penetrates the egg, those of you who believe that are in one camp, and those of us who believe that a child must exit the birth canal to be a child. We're in another camp. The Republicans have had many years of opportunities to declare that impregnated egg a child, and they have refused to do it and only drag it out every 2 years whenever they want to get those of you who do believe that way to forget that the year upon year upon year that the Republicans have had control of making that a child at conception, they've not done it. They expect you to forget and only blame it on the Supreme Court the way things are. The very least they could do if they were to just try to start the ball rolling of having you believe that that impregnated egg, that fertilized egg, was a child, the very, very least they could do would be to allow the parents of that child to name that egg, that fertilized egg, and give it full Social Security benefits, which they refuse to do. The very least, the very first thing they should have done, if they were anything other than political jerks, jerking you around, they would have passed legislation making a fertilized egg eligible for Social Security benefits because it was a child. But they knew it wasn't a child. They knew it was a fetus. A fetus that may or may not germinate long enough to actually exit the birth canal or be removed from the womb through a cesarean type operation. In any event, over the past six years or so, as Republicans have gained power in generally poorly educated states, corporate media controlled states, they have tried to make it increasingly more difficult for a woman to choose to have privacy when it comes to her health questions relating to a pregnancy. And Texas, a couple of years ago, passed a law. They had 21 abortion clinics, I think it was 21, and 23 is what they had. They had 23 abortion clinics in the entire state of Texas. And they passed a law that would effectively close all but 11 of them. More than half were going to be closed by a law that said that it is necessary for a physician doing an abortion to have the same kind of facilities as a walk-in surgical clinic. Knowing that that would make it too expensive for an abortion clinic to survive, in most cases, they passed laws to prevent women from being able to access abortions. A clear violation of the Roe v. Wade decision, which said clearly that that you could not write laws that were intended to make it difficult for a woman to get an abortion. Over the past 6 or 7 years, that's the approach the Republicans have taken. They haven't taken the easy approach of declaring a fertilized egg to be a child for Social Security benefits because they don't want to pay for those benefits, you see? They don't want that child to be eligible for Medicaid. They do not want that child to be eligible for Social Security. They don't believe that that fertilized egg is a child because they want a difference between a child that is a child in every definition of the term because it has passed the birth canal test. It has passed the breathing air test. They want your belief system to control you, not the medical facts. Fact number one is that medically a fetus is called a fetus because it is not yet a child. It doesn't become a child until it can breathe on its own. If that doesn't happen, then it is never a child. I'm sorry that some of you think that that is not true, but it is. And the Republicans refuse to give those fetuses all the benefits of a child, but they want you to believe that that fetus is a child, even though it is medically not a child. The 5-3 decision was an amazement to me, a very happy amazement to me. It recognized that the Republicans in Texas were simply making things hard for poor people, making things difficult for middle-income people, and making medical decisions about a woman's own body largely by men. Now, I don't believe that a man's ability to make decisions for women is always wrong. I don't believe that, not at all. But when it comes to a woman's body, where you are sentencing, literally sentencing a woman to 20 years, you need to have a reason. And if she doesn't want that 20-year sentence, and she has a way to avoid a 20-year sentence, she should be granted it. If you can have your children raised and out of the house in 20 years, the way things are going today, you need to celebrate. Because most kids today are staying at home with mom and dad till they're 35 or 40. Some people are born to be parents. They love their children. They want them to succeed, and they want to help them in every way they can. Some women want the privacy to be able to make a decision that they are not ready, they are not fit, they are not capable of accepting that 20-year sentence of care and nurturing. And they should have the ability to make that decision and not have a group of men make that decision for them. The Supreme Court got it right this time. This time, the Supreme Court made the right decision, and I applaud them. It is 31 minutes past the hour here at WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. WFT is community radio for East Central Illinois. As such, we do not do commercials. We do public service announcements. Here's one now.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. Where to go next? That's a good question. Let's go to Cindy Sheets. Cindy Sheets is a woman, was a woman, 42 years old, I believe, maybe 44, something in that neighborhood. She lived in Texas. She was an NRA drone. She would post things on her Facebook page. One of the posts that she said, if I could paraphrase, said something to the effect that I own 10 guns. If the feds decide to come and take 8 of my guns, how many guns do I have left? How many guns? She has 10 guns. The federal government decides she could only have 2, so they come to take 8. How many guns is she going to have left? What's the answer, my friends? You could call me real quick, or I could just answer it for you. Many of you know the answer already. You've already figured out the answer. But for those of you who did not figure out that since she was an NRA drone, her answer would be 10 guns left. Because she wasn't going to give up her guns. As Charlton Heston once said, you would have to pry his gun from his cold, dead hand as he lifted that musket above his head at the NRA convention. Well, one of the guns that Cindy had was a revolver that her grandfather had had. And her grandfather, being from Texas, also believed that guns help you be safer. So when he passed, Cindy got his gun. Some say that Cindy was a mentally challenged person. She was of normal or better than normal average IQ, but she had some anger management problems. The police department in the city in Texas she lived in would probably agree. Since 2012, they had to visit her home at least 14 times. Now, a few of them were because of mix-ups, they said, with the security system. But many more of them were because of domestic disputes between Cindy and her husband, Jason. They fought. I don't know what they fought about, but they fought hard enough that the police had to be called. I'm not sure if it was neighbors calling 911, or if it was Jason calling 911, or if it was Cindy calling 911. It doesn't really matter. 14 visits. Let's say only half of them were because of domestic violence since 2012, 4 years. Let's suppose there was only one visit to that home a year due to domestic violence. One visit. Let's assume there was just one. I think that a reasonable piece of legislation would be that if you have to be called, if the police have to be called more than once to your home for domestic violence issues, you can no longer store guns in your home. Cindy bragged about having 10. Last Friday night, she decided to hold a family meeting. And she called her husband, Jason, and her two daughters, Taylor and Madison, to a family meeting. I don't know what was said at the family meeting, but it was Jason's birthday. It was also Jason's birthday. Madison was 17, senior in high school, getting ready to go off to college. Taylor was 22. She was to be married Saturday, I believe, of this week. Friday of last week, Christy called this meeting. At some point during the meeting, Christy pulled out her grandfather's pistol. And Jason been down this road before, most likely with Christy, her being a gun nut as it is, in my humble opinion. Jason made the mistake when Christy showed the gun of saying, "Just shoot yourself. Make it easy on all of us. Just shoot yourself." Christy looked Jason in the eye and said, "No, that's not what this is about. This is about punishing you." I'm not sure whether Madison or Taylor took the first shot, but she began firing at her own daughters. Madison died at the scene, running outside the house. Jason, the big brave Jason, the Texan, Texas cowboy, took off running. And since he hadn't been shot, he was able to run faster than the girls. He was running away from his lunatic wife, his gun nut wife. Taylor, too, had been shot. Christy chased Taylor out into the street. Taylor, who was about to get married, didn't want to be shot again and asked her mother to stop. Her mother fired again, the last bullet in the gun. Taylor still didn't die. Christy went back in the house to reload. Christy went back in the house to reload. And she came out of the house with the gun about the same time the police showed up. The police told Christy to drop the gun. Christy decided that they were going to have to pry her gun from her cold, dead hand and refused to drop the gun. Madison, Christy was shot and killed by the police that arrived. Madison was dead. I'm not sure how many rounds went into her body, but she was dead at the scene. Taylor was taken to the hospital, and all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Taylor back together again. And she died at the hospital. This happened in a relatively quiet little cul-de-sac in Texas. This cul-de-sac must have been one of the very, very few cul-de-sacs in Texas that are gun-free zones. And the bad guy with the gun was Christy because she had the gun and nobody else in the damn cul-de-sac had a gun. She went back in to reload. None of the people in the houses came out with guns to take her on. Christy was a good guy with a gun until she was not. And all of those good guys in that cul-de-sac that had guns were too cowardly to get off their butts and move. Good guys with guns do not stop bad guys with guns from killing people. The incident in Orlando at the gay nightclub. The gay Muslim came in with his AK-47. There was a police officer armed on the on the property when he came through the door with his AK-47 against club rules, by the way. You were not supposed to be armed in the club unless you were a policeman. The armed guard was an off-duty policeman. That's why they hired him to be their guard, is so he would have a weapon. He had a weapon. He took on the shooter, and he couldn't take the shooter down. Police officer, trained, qualified, couldn't take out the shooter before 49 people were shot dead. Within 1 minute, a second police officer shows up at the club. 49 people were not yet dead. He exchanges fire with the perpetrator, and he too fails to take him out. Two police officers so far have failed to take out a bad guy with a gun. About 5 minutes into the 20 minutes the shooting took place, during which the shooting took place, within 5 minutes, a third police officer showed up. The third police officer in his squad car was wearing his bulletproof vest as he was supposed to. He was shot by the AK-47 and immobilized. He didn't die. The bulletproof vest saved him. But 49 people in that gay club in Orlando did die. And you had three police officers with guns. And the NRA would have you believe that a single good guy with a gun can stop the bad guys with the gun. Do you have any idea how many times in the past 40 years a good guy with a gun has stopped a mass shooting? Any idea how many times in the past 40 years a good guy with a gun has stopped a mass shooting? The phone's not ringing yet. Come on, somebody call me. It'll help calm me down. You don't want me to have a heart attack right here on the air. Calm me down. Talk me down. The answer is zero. A single good guy with a gun has stopped a mass murder zero times in the past 40 years. The hoo-ha that the NRA feeds its drones that a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun does not normally happen. Once in a while, somebody does get lucky. But it is just luck. The story I love to tell about the 68-year-old woman down in Clay County that lived in the country that shot the flashlight out of the hand of the guy that was trying to break into her house is an interesting story. And it's funny that they never caught those guys. They were running so fast as they left. There were two of them. Once she shot the flashlight out of one of their hands, they were out of there. It was just a lucky shot. I am certain she was not aiming for the flashlight. When I was working selling insurance, I would get home late at night every night. And by late at night, I mean after dark. It didn't matter if it was if the sun set at 9:30 at night. It was still going to be 10:30 or 11 before I was home most nights because I was out working. I saw people in their homes at their convenience. And the one thing I always wanted to see was a meteor landing close to where I was. And in 24 years that I was selling insurance and dragging my tired behind home at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, I did see a meteor one time. That's about the chances of you being able to stop a bad guy with a gun if you are a good guy with a gun. One in several thousand. You are much more likely to be killed with a gun if you own a gun than if you don't. That gun that you're killed with is not always your gun. But more than half the time, it is your own gun. Whether it's by suicide or accident, more than half the time, if you own a gun, it's the gun you own that kills you. And yet the NRA refuses to protect you from those guns. Back in the 1870s, when the NRA was formed at the prodding, if you will, of the federal government, the NRA was formed as a group of trainers, of people to train ordinary citizens in how to use a gun. Because in the 1860s and 70s, there was still a large part of our country that did not think we should have a standing army. Thomas Jefferson, as president, reduced our standing army to only 6,000 soldiers at one point in time. And that 6,000 included our Navy as well as our Army. You all know I have guns. And therefore, maybe that makes me more likely to be killed by a gun. But I want my gun, my guns. If the government passed a law tomorrow If a constitutional amendment was passed tomorrow and it went through the courts to take away my guns, I'd be first in line. I think I need to quit telling that story there. Right about there is where that story needs to end. Madison and Taylor Sheets are dead now because Christy Sheets was not required to turn in her guns after 14 911 calls to her home in 4 years. Domestic disputes, many of them. She and Jason had been estranged and were trying to get things back together. And for Jason's birthday, she called a family meeting. And the family meeting was to give Jason his birthday present. Two dead daughters. The NRA does everything it can to prevent the smallest amount of gun regulation. My friend Doug from the station here and I try to go to Blues, Brews, and Barbecues each year. And this year, we went to the event Saturday. And for whatever reason, we usually go in the evening. But we decided to go in the afternoon this Saturday. And they had their motorcycle event. And we watched the band that performed up until the judging of the motorcycle event, and then Doug and I decided to leave. It was hot. And there wasn't anybody there besides us and a handful of vendors and such. But anyway, we decided to leave before the motorcycle trophy winners were announced. And as I was leaving the event grounds, I, of course, had on my Navy veteran hat and a WEF t-shirt. Two organizations that I am truly proud of. And as we were leaving, this guy dressed all in black, black shirt, black pants, black hat, ball cap, came in the grounds. The only color that you could see on this guy, other than that he was a 50-something white man, were the letters on his black ball cap. N-R-A. I went up to this gentleman, introduced myself. I said, "Hi, I'm Stan Wagner. What's your name?" He told me his name. And I says to him, I see you support the NRA, huh? And he says, "Yes, I sure do." And I said, "Well, you keep it up because the NRA supports ISIS." And he almost fell over. "What? The NRA doesn't support ISIS?" I didn't have a long discussion with him. I didn't want to lose my temper. But the NRA does support ISIS. The NRA wants every person in this country to have a gun. But the truth is, the percentage of the population that owns guns is going down in the United States. Back when I was a kid, it was over 50% of the population owned a gun. And now the percentage is just over 30%. But each person that is a gun owner averages about 7 guns per person. There are some 300 million plus firearms in the hands of civilians. The number of guns owned by police forces is about a third of that number. Let me see if I can pull that number up. Let's see if my computer wants to play. That's not wanting to play too much. Wait a minute. Here we go. Excuse me. The number of guns owned by police departments, law enforcement, and military combined is 4 million. The number of guns owned by civilians, this is handguns, rifles, and shotguns, is 310 million. 310 million to 4 million. Do we really need to have more guns in the United States of America than 310 million? If we were just to pass a law that stopped the sale of new weapons to people, that, my friend, would not stop people from being able to buy guns. Because 310 million guns and a population of 310 million people, and every gun owner owning 7 or so guns, sounds to me like there'd be a lot of commerce between individuals if people really wanted to own a gun. That's just a thought. Just a thought. It is 5 minutes past the hour here at WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. In about an hour, we will have the Sync Sound System with Adrian. That is an electronic music program. He does all different genres of electronic music. I think that if you hang around for that, Adrian will give you an experience that you haven't had before. Many of you haven't had before. Some of you are his fans, of course. But some of you haven't heard his show yet and need to. So stick around. It'll be good for you. I want to remind you that Champaign-Urbana bands and fans, along with Course in Music, will be sponsor of the Original Arts Night number 16 at the Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana on Tuesday, July 12th. This is an event featuring original artists and their music, building a platform for Champaign-Urbana's musical scene. Donations will be accepted for CU bands and fans and for the performing artists. The concert will begin at 8 p.m. Call 217-367-7031 for more information. I want to also remind you that WEFT is conducting a survey of our listeners. You can go to our homepage at wft.org and click on the link to take the 2-minute survey, and we would appreciate any feedback you can give us because we really do want to know what you think of us. We really do want to know what kind of music you want to hear, what kind of talk you want to hear, what kind of programs you want to hear. It is 7 minutes past the hour. Let's have a little musical interlude. Ann Feeney, Have You Been to Jail for Justice?
Was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong, so wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books, do folks like us defy it? Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Now the law's supposed to serve us and so are the police. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. So get courage from your convictions. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Justice, will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
Well, I almost forgot how short that song was. Ann Feeney, Have You Been to Jail for Justice? Yes, yes. Let's talk a little bit more about guns. You know, there are so many gun myths of the NRA and the guys that think that gun ownership is a good idea, a safe idea. It makes you safer to own a gun. Mother Jones has an article, 10 myths of gun ownership. And one of those myths about gun ownership is a chart that shows the number of guns owned, percentage of the population that owns guns, versus the gun deaths per 100,000 people in the state. Alaska is hands down the state most likely to own a gun. And that's really quite understandable because it is a wilderness in many places, and there are bears that can kill you. So having a gun for protection makes a lot of sense to me. About 60% of the population of Alaska owns at least one gun. Alaska also is the leader in gun deaths per 100,000 residents per year at 20. 20 out of 1,000 may not seem to be a large percentage, but when that's you, it's 100%. Alaska goes for, about 45 days, I think, where the sun does not shine at all. No sun for about 45 days or so, maybe longer than that. I'd have to get my almanac out and check that, maybe. But I'm not gonna. They do have a very long night. The further north you go, the longer that night is. Depression sets in if you don't see the sun. And I would be willing to bet that many of those deaths are suicide from depression. On the other end of the spectrum, one of the lowest The second lowest, we'll do the second lowest first. The second lowest state of gun ownership is Rhode Island at about 6%. Rhode Island has gun deaths per 100,000 of about 5. 60% for Alaska, gun deaths 20. 6% Rhode Island, gun deaths, 5%. Delaware, 5% gun ownership, maybe 4%. The chart is not that accurate. But they have about 10 deaths per 1,000 in Delaware. Delaware is a larger state than Rhode Island. I'm not sure I understand why. They have almost twice as many deaths with fewer guns per 100, with fewer guns as a percentage of the population. But they do. Let's see. What other myth is a good one? Yeah. I've already told you this one. I got my number wrong off the top of my head. The number of mass shootings stopped by armed civilians in the past 33 years is 0. It's not 40. It's 33. But the NRA myth is that a good guy with a gun can stop a bad guy with a gun. And it just doesn't work. Chances that a shooting in a hospital emergency department involves guns taken from guards is 1 in 5. Hospital emergency departments have armed guards because sometimes they have thugs brought in. White gang members, black gang members, Latino gang members, they have thugs brought in. And 1 in 5 shootings in a hospital emergency room is because one of those gang members or somebody strung out on drugs grabbed the gun from the guard and shot somebody. Crazy. This is a big one, in my opinion. Guns at home keep you safer. Not true. Owning a gun has been linked to higher risks of homicide, suicide, and accidental death by guns. For every time a gun is used in self-defense in the home, there are 7 assaults or murders, 11 suicide attempts, and 4 accidental shootings involving the gun in the home. Let's read that again to make sure you understood it. For every time somebody uses a gun that they keep at home for self-defense, for self-defense, every time, there are 7 assaults or murders of family members or other visitors to the home by the homeowner, 11 suicide attempts, and 4 accidents involving guns in or around the home. Forty-three 43% of homes with guns and kids have at least 1 unlocked firearm. In one experiment, 1/3 of 8 to 12-year-old boys who found a handgun pulled the trigger. 1/3 of young boys that find a handgun will check to see if it's loaded by pulling the trigger. Does that scare you? Do you have kids? I suggest that you go to Mother Jones and read these myths, because I think they show some facts. This is data. This is research that's been done. This is not some opinionated ex-Navy guy throwing stuff up off the top of his head like I did that 40 when it's really 33. You know what I mean. It's not just an opinion. It's researched. It's fact. Another canard, another lie from the NRA that vicious, violent video games deserve to be blamed for more gun violence. Really? We did a study here. This study was done by PricewaterhouseCoopers, a small arms survey, the Centers for Disease Control, Gun Policy Organization, University of Sydney, Australia. They did a little research into vicious, violent video games and gun deaths. In the United States, during the period of this survey, there was an average of $44 spent on vicious, violent video games per capita in the United States. In Japan, the amount of money spent on vicious, violent video games was $55 per capita. $11 more than in the United States. So if vicious, violent video games deserve more blame for gun violence than guns do, these numbers would be different. The annual number of gun homicides in the United States during the period of this survey was 11,000. The annual gun deaths in Japan, even though they spent $11 more on vicious, violent video games that cause people to get guns and kill people, the number of homicides using guns in Japan per year was 6. More money spent on vicious, violent video games than in the United States, and almost no murders. The reason? The number of civilian firearms per 100 people. In the United States, that number was 88. In Japan, which has very, very strict gun laws, the number of civilian firearms per 100 people was 0.6. You can't get killed with a gun if you don't have a gun. Doesn't happen. They still have their gangs in Japan. They have gangs in Japan, and they're pretty tough dudes. But they still don't have the gun deaths that we have in the United States. And that's because of a little thing called regulation. If you read the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America, you know, the one the NRA is always fighting to protect. That's the amendment that the NRA loves. That is their Bible, their God, their alma mater. Whatever. It's the best. The pinnacle of freedom is right there in the Second Amendment. And what the Second Amendment says, in part, is a well-regulated militia. Three small words. Well-regulated militia. What is a regulation? What is a regulation? Come on, you know, I'm leading you. A regulation is a law, is a control. The NRA will allow no gun regulation. None. Zero. Zip. When they say that they want mental health screenings publicly, they make that public pronouncement so that you'll believe that they're looking for a way to protect us from the bad guys with guns, because they want at least a mental health screening. Well, Cindy Sheets is the example of the NRA's refusal to allow any regulation of somebody who clearly has a mental health problem, and they will not allow her guns to be taken away, and now her two beautiful daughters are dead because the NRA does not want to have the Second Amendment followed for a well-regulated militia. Don't believe the NRA when they say they're fighting for the Second Amendment. They are not. They're fighting for Smith & Wesson to be able to sell you another gun. They're nothing more than a salesman for the gun industry. Nothing more than that. That's all that matters to them, is having the road wide open so that anybody, anywhere, can buy any number of guns they want for any reason they want. That is what the NRA stands for. A guy from ISIS walks in a gun store in Oklahoma and buys 1,000 guns. There is no question except cash or credit. That's the only question the guy has to answer.
Is that cash or credit?
Now, he does have to pass the federal background check, which takes about 0 minutes. That's not quite true. Takes a couple of minutes. But if he's buying an AK platform weapon, he can walk out of that gun store with an an hour, easily enough, with as many guns as he can pay for. One more statement the NRA likes to have its drones throw around is that we don't need more gun laws. We just need to enforce the ones we have. Well, the truth of the matter is that 75% of the weapons used in mass shootings between 1982 and 2012 were obtained legally. 75% obtained legally. No law to enforce. As much as 40% of all gun sales involve private sellers, and private gun sales do not require any background check. 40% of prison inmates who used guns in their crimes said they'd gotten them this way. From a private sale. And curiously enough, 80% of all gun owners in the United States would like to see this loophole closed. This loophole is also referred to as the gun show loophole, because a private person sale does not have to do any bank background check. The gun show loophole, if that gun is sold to you in the parking lot because a guy has an extra AK-47 and he wants to sell it, he can sell it to you in the parking lot and say, "Oh, they're getting $1,000 for these inside. I'll give it to you for $900. And you got yourself a deal. And a $900 gun, and I throw those numbers out figuratively because I know they're a little high. Another investigation found that 62% of all online gun sellers were willing to sell to buyers who said they couldn't pass a background check. Do I need to read that again? 62% of online gun sellers do not care if you cannot pass a background check. You can tell them, "I can't pass a background check. I shot my mother-in-law the other day, and they won't let me have my guns back, and I want to buy another one." And they'll sell it to you. They did another little test. Researchers posed as illegal straw buyers. From legal gun stores. 20% of licensed California gun dealers agreed to sell the guns to them anyway. Finally, we need more laws, right? The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives did not have a permanent director for 7 years due to an NRA-backed requirement that the Senate approve the nominee, and the Senate would not approve the nominee. The only way we got a director for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms was when the Obama administration said, if it's a presidential appointment, it only takes a 51-vote passage. So the Republicans lost their filibuster. Because this Republican Party is unlike any Republican Party this country has ever had. And you can tell that by looking at their leader, Donald Trump. Donald Trump is more like leader of the Aryan Nation than he is a supporter of the United States Constitution. He's more like a Clyde Bundy than he is a person that believes the United States should stay together. Donald Trump, running for president of the United States, is running for one reason and one reason only. The reason is to enrich Donald Trump. That was proven when he went to visit his reopening of his golf course in Scotland. He didn't bother to make any appointments with any governmental leaders in his trip. It was all about Donald Trump and how his suites for watching the various golf tournaments were the best in the world. Donald Trump is running for president of the United States for Donald Trump. Pure and simple. WFT is community radio. We do not do commercials. We do public service announcements. Here's one now.
My grandfather served in World War II. Spending time with him were the best memories of my life. I became a physician at VA because of my grandfather, so I can help others like him. I can't imagine working with better doctors or a more dedicated staff. I'm fulfilling my life's mission with the help of my team and thanks to these veterans. I'm proud to be a doctor at VA and proud to honor my grandfather every day. Search VA Careers to find out more.
And I still owe you a public service announcement, so here's another.
Today, a new creature walks among us, causing fear, mayhem, and injury.
Stay back, children.
Look out for the dreaded digital deadwalkers. With faces pressed against their little handheld devices, they put all good citizens in harm's way.
Hey, dude, I'm walking here.
Sorry, I didn't see you.
A public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who want to keep everyone well connected with healthy bones.
WFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the Midwatch. I'm Reasonable Man Stan. Give me a call, 217-FLY-LIVE. That's 217-359-5483. 217-359-5483. Give me a call, add your voice to the program. Let's have a conversation. We can indeed figure stuff out. It's really not that hard. It's really not that hard. Trey Gowdy and the Republicans had their news conference. I think it was yesterday. Giving the information about their Benghazi report. They spent $7 million and claimed to have whole bunches of new information. Whole bunches of new information. None of which proved anything was done terribly wrong. And even more importantly, none of it was new. There have been at least 10 different investigations into the Benghazi affair. These investigations have all been chaired by Republicans. And every one of these investigations have came to the same conclusion. And that conclusion is that because of our state of preparedness for an event like Benghazi, Hillary Clinton couldn't have saved those guys. What is part of our level of preparedness? What is it? It's money. It is money. When you have a budget, as Clinton had as Secretary of State, that is not at the level you choose it to be because Republicans cut your budget, then anything that goes bad cannot be all your fault. And yet the Republicans, with this latest investigation, spending $7 million, the other nine investigations, spending at least $5 million apiece to prove that no wrongdoing occurred, nobody's life could have been saved. And hiding, literally hiding, many important facts from the public. Let's just review a little bit of Chris Stevens. Chris Stevens was a Libyan expert. He'd been working in the Libyan embassy for years, not as the ambassador, but as an assistant. Libya, Egypt, the Middle East. He was the expert. At the time of the attack on Benghazi, the United States of America was trying to find a helpful hand in calming the waters after the removal of Gaddafi. The government of Libya was in shambles. We had been trying to get Christopher Stevens diplomatic immunity for weeks. On September the 10th, his diplomatic immunity was still not complete through the channels in Libya. A meeting had been set up for September the 11th, 2012, between the U.S. ambassador which was going to be Stevens, because he was ambassador pro tem, just hadn't received his diplomatic credentials yet. On 2011, a very important meeting had already been set up. So on September the 10th, 2012, decision was made that Christopher Stevens would go to Libya as a civilian, an ambassador pro tem, but really as a civilian since he didn't have any ambassador credentials. Still working for the State Department, still doing a very dangerous job, because he was meeting with people he considered to be friendlies, with all of his experience. He went. On September 11th, he left the embassy and went to the consulate in Benghazi. Within 15 minutes of his arrival there with the other three Americans that died, he and one of the other three were already dead. There was no hours-long torture session, as some Fox Channel hosts said. He died almost immediately. Was his body desecrated? Yes. But the desecration occurred after his death. Not a good thing, but not as horrendous as having to be tortured to death. Oh, by the way, Trump wants to torture again, but that's another topic. Every Republican report, Trey Gowdy's included, has said that there was nothing the United States could do to save the lives of the people that died that day. Not Christopher Stevens, not any of the other three. They were not savable. Had the Republicans funded the State Department differently, as requested, maybe they could point fingers at Hillary then. But right now, there's plenty of room for blame on both sides. And Hillary, contrary to what Republicans would have you believe, does not have a crystal ball. She is not able to read the minds of people that might want to do harm to the United States. She has to go with the information that she's given. Sometimes it's exactly correct, and sometimes it's exactly wrong. But all you have is what you have. And so you go and do the best you can. And that's what Hillary has done as Secretary of State with regard to Benghazi and the Middle East. One of the things that the Gowdy Commission likes to drag out and talk about on occasion, that's not the first thing they talk about, is the new facts they got from the drone pilots. You see, we had drones in the area, and those drones were surveillance drones. They were not equipped with weaponry. They were equipped with cameras. 3 years prior to Trey Gowdy's investigation, those videos had been turned over to another commission by the Republicans. 3 years they had those videos. But nobody thought it was important to talk to these guys, have them testify, except for Trey Gowdy. And what did they testify to? What was on the video? They testified to what they could see. A picture is worth 1,000 words, for God's sakes. The drone pilots were not the captains and generals and people in charge of making military decisions. The drone pilots were in charge of flying a drone where they were told to fly a drone. And they did a good job. They had no information to give, but because they were questioned in front of the committee and nobody else had questioned them, it was brand new information, even though the pictures had been there for 3 years. And nobody, well, none of the big wigs in the media, the corporate media, ABC, NBC, CBS, none of these guys that I have heard have pointed this reality out. They have let the Republicans get away with saying things that have already been said. Saying they show brand new things, and it's just not true. All right, let's see if I can get back to this. The claim... Some of the claims of Trey Gowdy and the Republicans that they had new stuff. The claim that Secretary Clinton was considering a trip to Libya in 2012 and that the department wanted to establish a permanent facility in Benghazi was reported there 3 years prior to the Gowdy witch hunt. The claim that no military assets were deployed to Benghazi on the night of the attacks was reported 3 years prior to the Gowdy witch hunt. The claim that a secure video teleconference on the night of the attacks focused overwhelmingly on a YouTube video was reported 2 years before the Gowdy witch hunt, and it was proven to be a lie. That's not what happened. They didn't talk primarily about the YouTube video. They talked about a terrorist attack. The claim that a military embassy security team headed to Tripoli was ordered to change out of their uniforms and into civilian clothes several times the morning after the attacks was reported 3 years prior to Trey Gowdy's investigation. But he claimed that to be new news also. $7 million. Now we've had 10 investigations. All of the investigations have said that nothing could be done to save those people's lives. And indeed, what we should have been hearing, all of these investigations, because it came out during the first investigation, was that the 30 or 40 civilians that were saved from that consulate complex were saved by the people that Chris Stevens went to meet up with, because they were friendlies. They were people could be trusted. And they saved all of the American lives that could have been saved. Chris Stevens' death is a tragedy. The deaths of the other three people were tragedies. And when it comes to tragedies, in my experience, there are few good guys with guns better than United States Navy SEALs. Two of the people murdered were U.S. Navy SEALs. Armed U.S. Navy SEALs. And they couldn't take out the bad guys either. Oh my goodness. We've had so much fun here tonight. It is 57 minutes past the hour. That means I've got to get out of here. I see that Adrian is in the house with the sync sound system. I'm going to get out of here with a little David Rovix, Resistance. Y'all be safe till next Wednesday about 6 o'clock. I'll see you then, and maybe, just maybe, we can have a little conversation. Be safe till then. Bye for now.
You can say that it's about the savages. You can say you have a better way to live. You can call it manifest destiny. You can talk of all your civilization will give. You can say that we're a thing of history, and progress is the future you will bring. You can send your armies to these mountains. You can say we'll prosper beneath your king. But there will always be resistance. The next battle will always be near. As long as you have everything, there will be those who have nothing to fear. And little by little, or maybe all at once, you will lose. Because our future is not yours to choose. You can say you've got to stop the communists. You can say that our ideals can't succeed. You can say that competition is the only way, and a global system based on greed. You can call yourself a Democrat. You can call yourself whatever you will. You can keep on stamping out the fires you start, so you might stay on top of the hill. There will always be resistance. The next battle will always be